to the fifth podcast of the Gallery of the Mind. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. Years ago, I had a dream of an alley with paintings on the walls. Let me take you into the adventure that is in those pictures. All you need to bring is your imagination. All you need to do is visualize the exotic scenes. But be careful, because the theme for tonight is insanity. Close your eyes and come with me. There you are, inspecting a painting of a river with a faint mist over it. There is nothing odd about the painting, but the name appears to be misspelled. The title is Bestiel. It is spelled B-E space S-T-I-A-L. As you think about it, you flow with its story.
Bestiel. Look at how the arrows fly so wild, and forever you'll know the danger of the mysterious fire inside a child, of dancing demons swirling in anger. The angels have stood by so silent, and the mighty God has turned his head. So the spirit spins in hateful defiance, and nature shudders in mortal dread. Unseen forces I stare inside, monstrous tornadoes of fever, turmoil near and hatred wide, fire to both and peace to neither. Confusions do stir and demons do spin. Ocean of God, I wonder why the heart of man can never win. As the spirit flows, so does it die. But rivers rush cool, and they always will, longing for the place where the spirit is still.
That poem was Bestiel, and the music was Dreamlike. All music in this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod. As you were looking at that picture, you could feel someone standing beside you, watching with you. Out of the corner of your eye, you see a glimpse of a shadowy figure. When you turn to see what it is, there is no one there. When you turn back to the painting, you are surprised to see that there is a different painting there. It is a painting of a woman dancing wildly in the rain. Behind her is a wall. Looking closely, you see that there is a hole in the wall and an eye peering through it. The eye is yours.
Darling, darling, insanity. My darling, darling, insanity. She is a picture of what cannot be. She dances alone in the rain, enticing others to do the same. I can see her from behind the wall, while I listen to her lonely song. I feel the darkness of her call, a deeper darkness than I've ever known. Blocked from her, I feel her soul. Darling, darling, come to me, and we'll move together and be whole, in a place that cannot be. So I join her and we dance together, and beauty is born again and forever.
That poem was Darling, Darling, Insanity, and the music was Dark Dance. That poem and many of the works you've heard here are available on my website. You can see some of the pictures that I described there also. You can also purchase the book or CD called Where Beauty and Darkness Meet if you want more of the Gallery of the Mind. All of this can be found on my website, which is galleryofthemind.com. That's galleryofthemind.com. Well, we've come to the portion of the show where I either read listeners' feelings on the pictures or I tell mine. Unfortunately, I haven't received any comments, so I will give a little history on the poem In Memory. I don't feel that I write most of my stories. I just get an ideal and go with it. And the story seems to always end in a way that I had not planned. With this poem, it felt like even the idea was not mine. My wife and I were in the car. She was driving. I think that I was in Florida at the time. And I just got the feeling that there was a soldier that had died near there. I felt that he was surrounded, and there was a feeling of disbelief and betrayal. He was waiting for someone. It was really a weird feeling, so I just start telling what I felt to my wife. She didn't really pay me much attention. I was just being weird again. But I wrote the main parts of his story and built my own story around it. So, am I saying that this story is true? Of course not. But then again, you never know. In Memory. She said she'd come. Our plans were laid. She promised. But only the soldiers came. So I stand alone, simply betrayed. I stand with only the memory of her name. Salacious howls approach me with sharp swords to tear me apart. But I'm blind to all but memory of a name which breaks my heart. Sweet love, I called to a ghost in my head. In response to the cuts from all around, her name on my tongue as I bled, her memory with me as I hit the ground. With only one thought, I died there, in memory of a name that didn't care. Back in the gallery, you see a group of three people looking at a picture. You join them and look at the picture. It is a picture of a balding man. He appears to be shattered as if he is glass. You look down at the title of the picture. It says, There is a Future. The title doesn't seem to fit the painting. You find yourself repeating the title.
There is a Future. In an underground shelter in Utah, the stage has been set for a great scientist's dreams to come true.
There.
The door is shut. Shut on the past. Shut on the hatred and killing. The future is truly bright. Now, where is that videotape? I want to watch it all begin again. Dr. Clouch searches around till... Ah, here it is. He hurriedly puts it in the VCR and hits play.
More bad news today. The plague appeared in a seventh country today. Turkey is the latest country to be hit by the plague. Scientists from America, Japan, and the EU were sent to India today, the third country in which the disease appeared. No one is sure about the cause of the mysterious disease or why it seems to be able to spontaneously appear on several different continents. But because of this property... It has earned the name The Continental Disease.
A very elegant name. They can't figure it out. I use the postal service to mail candy or perfume samples or whatever to various unimportant people all over the world. So simple, they'll never figure it out until it's too late.
Connections between the countries, Argentina, Russia, India, Norway, Egypt, New Zealand, and Turkey are being explored. The things that these countries have in common are systematically being eliminated as possible ways for the disease to have spread.
Think, you fools, think! The problem can't be fixed by just blowing something up. Soon the world will be cleansed of the inferior warmongers.
The disease is spreading at a very rapid pace. Scientists are completely baffled, and people are dying.
The next morning. What a great sleep. It's actually happening. The world is being fixed. Let me check my calculations again. I have to be sure. Ah, yes, here they are. In 15 years, the continental disease will wipe out mankind, and the disease will die out in another 5 years. Absolutely perfect! Dr. Klaus smiles with satisfaction as he looks around the room at all the awards he has won for his work with contagious diseases. The lifetime achievements of a true genius. And he was only 44 years old. Then his smile changes as he comes to his wedding picture and begins to remember. Pictures of him and a beautiful young lady named Magdalene will fill his mind as he remembers standing before a priest. Do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? I do. You take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband?
I do.
They were so happy and young. Only 18 years old. It was the happiest time of Dr. Klaus's life. Dr. Klaus saw many mental pictures of his wife enjoying their lives until...
Edward, I'm pregnant.
I thought I was as happy as I could ever be. And now you've made me happier. Things aren't just supposed to happen that way.
No, they aren't. But thank God they do.
They hug and kiss. Then his memory suddenly switches to a hospital. Dr. Klaus is pacing. Flashes of nurses running and rushing equipment into the delivery room suddenly intrude into his memories. A little later, the doctor solemnly walks out to see the hysterical eyes of Dr. Klaus. Doctor, why is it taking so long? Why was there so much equipment being rushed into the delivery room? Is the baby okay? Well, the baby is okay. Magdalene? No, I'm sorry, but... Magdalene, no! Dr. Klaus rushes past the doctor and runs into the delivery room. He runs to Magdalene and kneels beside her bed. She is not moving. Magdalene? Suddenly, Magdalene regains consciousness, and all the doctors, nurses gasp in amazement.
I love you. I couldn't die before I told you that.
Please... Please don't die. You mean everything to me. You are my world. Please, Meg. Please, please. Tears stream, and Dr. Klaus feels so helpless. So utterly helpless as he watches his world shatter.
Promise me that you'll take good care of our daughter.
Daughter?
Yes.
I promise. With all my heart, I promise. They seem to touch with their eyes. Dr. Klaus stands and bends over the bed. He passionately kisses her as the heart monitors go flat. The doctors begin to pull Klaus away. Come on now, sir. She's dead.
Everything is going to be okay.
No, it is not. Everything's destroyed. We were supposed to be happy. Things weren't supposed to happen this way. I loved her. I love her.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay.
You don't understand. Nothing has meaning without her. I have nothing. Nothing.
You have a daughter, and you are a father.
Dr. Klaus looks at the nurse holding the baby. Then the baby. Oh. She's beautiful, like her mother.
See? There is a future.
Dr. Klaus comes back to reality, repeating. There is a future. There is a future. Let me check my instruments. He solemnly goes about checking various things in his underground shelter. He writes the date and notes on the status of equipment. Generators in case power is needed. Check. Solar rechargeable batteries. Check. Schematics in case the machinery breaks down. Check. Freezer temperature. Check. Later. Now where is that videotape? I want to watch it all begin again. He begins watching it, but he does not finish. He begins laughing halfway through it, laughing so hysterically that he falls asleep from exhaustion. Ah, 19 years, 358 days till I can return to the surface and repopulate the Earth. I'd better check the temperature on the freezer. There's going to be nothing left to chance. Dr. Klaus goes to the freezer holding 100 frozen embryos, 10 of which are fertilized with his own sperm. After the world is cleansed of the warmongers, I'll take these embryos to Klaus Laboratories. I'll use the artificial wombs there to incubate the future. The children will have their own birthday there. His laughter abruptly stops as he says, "Ach, little Maggie." Then he begins to remember again. A large house, Dr. Klaus and his daughter Maggie.
Oh, Father, I'm so happy. I can't believe I finally graduated. I'm going to be a doctor, just like you, Father.
You're a genius, darling.
Oh, don't say that.
Who else could they graduate medical school at such an early age or have an IQ so high?
Oh, Daddy, but who's going to hire someone my age? I won't even be 21 until tomorrow. Who's going to hire me, especially for something as important as embryology research and artificial support for babies outside the womb? That's so important, Father. Those things would have saved Mom.
Well, I have a present for you from your mom.
What?
I never spent the insurance money after your mother's death. I saved it for you. I set up a laboratory with the money for you. I also use my contacts to get a government grant for your research.
Daddy!
You won't have to be hired. You're going to be the boss. See, my darling, there is a future.
I love you so much.
I love you too. You're all I live for. I promised your mom.
I know she's happy.
The mentioning of Magdalene again brings a tear to Dr. Klaus's eye. So Maggie hugs him. He never thought he'd be happy again, but he is. I never dreamed things would happen this way. Dr. Klaus's memory next turns to an older Maggie in a military uniform.
Why did you have to volunteer for the reserves? Your laboratory is about to perfect the first of the artificial womb. They need you, and you won't need the money from the reserves.
I know, but I just want to help the country.
But your unit has now been called into the Gulf War. Please don't go, Maggie.
Father, you always worry too much about me. I guess that's why I love you so much.
Please, if anything happens to you, my whole life will be shattered.
Don't worry. Things aren't going to happen that way.
Please.
Dr. Klaus remembers walking up to see the body of his daughter. The wind is cold, and Dr. Klaus's eyes almost show fear. Don't worry, Edward. Everything's going to be okay.
No, they're not. This world killed my baby.
The warmongers of this world will always be with us. Things like that can't be changed. Dr. Klaus did truly feel helpless, like the time he watched his wife die. He felt so utterly helpless as he approached the casket to see his daughter's lifeless face that once again his life shattered.
The warmongers.
He hears the voice of his daughter coming from the casket.
Father.
Maggie? I thought you were dead.
Edward, who are you talking to?
You know that I couldn't die without telling you that I love you.
Dr. Klaus's friends look worried as Dr. Klaus speaks to the corpse.
You mean everything to me. You can't die.
Goodbye, Father.
Dr. Klaus leaned over the casket and lifted Maggie's body and began to passionately kiss her. A crowd of funeral-goers gasp in absolute shock. A couple of friends grab Dr. Klaus and pull him away from the body. Dr. Klaus hysterically cries while saying, "It wasn't supposed to happen this way!" Back in reality, Dr. Klaus falls to his knees.
"I tried to protect her, but the warmongers of this world took her. They took her life, now I'll take theirs. There will be a future in which I'll never be helpless again. I'll control everything, and justly will lead a world free of evil and war. They will pay."
Dr. Klaus stops crying and begins to continue his work. Year after year, he checks the gauges. Year after year, he goes over his plans. Year after year, he sits alone, scheming. Year after year, he watches the same videotape. And year after year, he laughs a little bit harder until...
20 years! 20 years of my life in this miserable hole. 20 years are finally over. My list of things to do. There is my list.
He hysterically turns around in the shelter, looking here and there.
Ah, there it is. Prepare the embryos for transport. Finally, I'll open the door.
Dr. Klaus uses a remote control type device and the panel slides open. A mound of dirt falls through the open door. This is the door to the surface. Dr. Klaus looks up with an insane smile on his face. The smile turns to a hysterical look of disbelief.
What? After all these years of planning, it can't end like this, no.
It seems the concrete is covering the doorway.
A building must have fallen on top of the exit to my shelter. Maybe there was a war and mayhem as the world died. No, they can't have taken away my future again. No, I'm not helpless. I can do something. I can't be trapped. I have to get out of here.
Dr. Klaus's hysteria seems to rise with each passing moment. He begins to rip the things he needs, and he begins to build something. Minutes later, he has built a bomb and sets off the explosion.
I won't be stopped. Ah!
The explosion happens in such a confined space. So many things are destroyed, and Dr. Klaus is badly injured. But he looks up and sees daylight. The concrete was blown off the shelter. There is such happiness in Dr. Klaus's heart until he remembers the embryos.
No, I didn't shield the embryos.
Dr. Klaus staggers over to the mess of broken glass.
What have I done? Some can be saved, I think.
His head feels very dizzy, and he feels himself about to pass out. That's when he hears murmurs and voices. He looks up just before he passes out and sees many people staring down into the shelter, then only darkness. Hours later...
He's in pretty bad shape.
Yeah, I didn't think he was gonna pull through it.
What was he doing in that shelter anyway?
Did he set off that explosion, or did something just malfunction down there?
I heard that it looked like he set it off himself.
How strange.
The oblivion of sleep. Hours later.
Doctor, he's regained consciousness.
Can you understand what he's saying?
Oh, you were at a hospital. My name is Maggie. I'm your nurse.
Another nurse whispers to the doctor.
Is he going to make it?
Well...
Doctor!
What?
He's asking about the continental disease.
What? How odd.
The continental disease.
Didn't you know? We cured that 17 years ago.
Oh. Then I guess there is no future.
The doctors and nurses look puzzled as he peacefully dies.
Welcome back from that rather odd journey. The music for that piece was The Long Note and Dragon and Toast. Susan Hayde, Nancy Van Fleet, and Dave Dahl were the voice actors starring in it. Okay, I'll finish the night with one more picture. You see a picture of an angel. It has a very serious look on its face. The angel is holding a scroll proclaiming a message written on the scroll. The title of the picture is The Angel's Poem. You wish you could hear what it was saying. And then somehow you feel someone speaking directly into your ear.
The Angel's Poem. The music of war fills the air as armies march throughout the earth. Flags do wave and swords do glare in honor of a virgin birth. To convert all men with the sword, man's part in a blessed scheme. To send souls straight to the Lord, to be in accord with the one God's dream. Bombs give such beauty to the night, and holy men applaud the kill as a joyful offering to bring the light, a sacrifice done to appease God's will. So an angel came down and proclaimed to men that God would die once again.
Well, once again, we come to the end of the show. Before I go, I want to encourage those writers out there that resonate with what I'm doing to send their work to be pictures in the gallery. Remember, you must send me audio files of yourself telling the story. If I get enough, then maybe this show will expand to every 2 weeks, and there will be interviews with the popular writers. Please send your work to webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. That's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. See you next month.